Haven't seen you puffing on one of those in a long while.
Want one?
No, thanks. I know of 100 better ways to kill myself.
The armorer shrugged and went back to enjoying his smoke. JB was Ryan's oldest friend. Circumstances brought them together on the legendary trader's once thriving caravan of warwags years earlier, and they soon found their personalities and talents to perfectly complement each other. While Ryan was the trader's designated war captain, JB and his love of weapons made him the perfect lieutenant. Weaponsmith, armorer, master blaster, gunsmith, he wore the designations with quiet pride and calm efficiency. A living, breathing cache of knowledge of all forms of weaponry and how they could be used most effectively, JB used his eidetic memory to keep himself and his companions safe and whole. His mastery of guns and their specs was invaluable to anyone attempting to traverse the Deathlands. He was still learning, but it was the rare weapon indeed that he hadn't read about or held in his own hands. Traveling with a trader had provided him the opportunity to spend time in every backwater town and ville the Deathlands had to offer, and in all of them, a new blaster could be traded for, or at the very least, handed over for a closer look in exchange for his own. Those had been days of wonder for JB, instilling in his heart a wanderlust he'd never been able to shake. There was always something new around the corner, and even with no guarantees of it being friend or foe, he wanted to see what the world had to offer to him. Under 5'9", with a slim build that gave no indication of the wiry muscularity beneath his clothes, JB was approximately 40 years old. His actual age was unknown to his friends, and even to the armorer himself, since his family hadn't believed in celebrating birthdays. He wore a multi-pocketed brown leather jacket, dark trousers that were also lined with more pockets, heavy combat boots, and a battered, well-traveled fedora. Perched on his nose was the new pair of wire-rimmed glasses, obtained back in Freedom, along with darker news concerning his deteriorating vision. News from the mall optician the armorer had chosen to share with no one until he became a potential liability. The doctor had called the disease glaucoma, and the current sad state of what passed for eye care in the ruin of the Deathlands offered no cure or treatment. A matter of time, he had told JB with a sigh. Only a matter of time. When that day came, when his pale gray eyes no longer could be trusted, JB had already decided he would take care of cutting his own losses. But for now, his vision was clear, even if the new frames pinched like a vise. He groaned and removed them to temporarily relieve the aching pressure. At a first glance, JB looked like a runty man, unhealthy and malnourished. His complexion was sallow and dark, and from close-up, faint acne scars from his teen years could be seen on his cheeks and forehead. In another time, J.B. Dix would have been seen as a man of no consequence. Looks could be deceiving. The compact man was a walking arsenal, capable of massive amounts of carnage when he chose to unleash his full capacity. The obvious signs were in the mini-Uzi hung low over one shoulder, the trigger at waist level for easy use, or in the Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun he carried in his left hand, an extremely deadly weapon that didn't fire ordinary rounds, but instead held 8 Remington 12-gauge cartridges, each with 20 flechettes, or even in the fighting knife sheathed at his hip. But his clothing and boots also contained a wealth of hidden equipment. Fuses of varying lengths, and a tight ball of Plasex, coils of wire and packets of shiny lockpicks, an invaluable folding mini-sextant, and spare ammo and blades. JB took another puff from his concise cigar.
Yeah, I don't come across these as often as I'd like. Nothing like a good smoke.
Or a good case of lung cancer.
The woman behind JB was his companion and lover, Dr. Mildred Wyeth, a time traveler from the period before the New Cost that ended the civilized world. Like the armorer, Mildred was a prized companion. Intelligent, compassionate, and an astute judge of character, she was a trained physician and former pioneer in the field of cryonics and cryogenics. The woman had suffered an adverse reaction to anesthesia during a minor operation and had been preserved using the very same cryonic processes she had helped to develop. Mildred had remained on ice until Ryan and the others had found her, sleeping in her silver coffin. In a series of tense hours, they had managed to restore her to life successfully. A doctor of another kind entirely followed Mildred Wyeth. Peering from behind the stocky black woman was the weathered face of Doc Tanner. A lifetime of hard sights was etched into his skin and his eyes. Doc gripped his ebony walking cane tightly. The silver lion head handle of the stick was serene, impassively keeping the secret of the honed blade of Toledo steel housed hidden inside the body of the cane. A most unusual hand blaster was holstered at the man's hip. In the holster was an ornately tooled Lamah, a unique weapon dating back to the early days of the Civil War. Engraved in flowing script and decorated with 24-karat gold as a commemorative tribute to the great Confederate soldier James Ewell Brown Stewart, or Jeb Stewart, as his friends and folks in Virginia referred to him, the massive hand cannon weighed in at over 3.5 pounds. The blaster was a quick way to check how weary Doc was getting. After a long day or particularly intense event, the heavy gun added a noticeable lurch to his step. At the moment, Doc Tanner was lurching like a drunken barmaid, but he gave no complaint. The gun had two barrels and an adjustable hammer, firing a single 63 caliber round like a shotgun and 9.44 caliber rounds in revolver mode. Finding ammo for the grapefruit scattergun round was extremely difficult, but the old man refused to give up the sometimes clumsy blaster for a more modern weapon. Doc was often heard to intone a memorable quote describing the link between himself and his gun.
Once a man is set in his ways, there is no reason to change unless absolutely, positively necessary. And I have no intention of attempting to reinvent myself now.
Doc was a living link to the past that stretched back even farther than Mildred Wyeth's. The old man had been born in South Stratford, Vermont, on February 14, 1868. 28 years later, he'd been time-trawled via a modified matter transfer chronal unit to the year 1998, an unwitting subject in an experiment of the future. 2 years after that, at the flashpoint of the millennium in the year 2000, he'd been thrust forward more than 100 years into the unknown, the future, the after-the-Holocaust world of the Deathlands. Doc stumbled, the heavy blaster weighing heavily on his thin frame. He used his sword stick to break his fall, even as a steadying hand came from behind, courtesy of Christy Roth.
My thanks, child. This rubble-strewed hall is hell on two-legged locomotion.
Don't mention it.
Christy was ready to fall asleep on her feet herself, so she could only imagine how Doc was feeling. Even her usually animated red hair was drooping, hiding the fact that besides being a stunningly beautiful woman, Christy was also a mutant. Her abilities were masked, not overt like the sucker-lined hands and tongues of the Stickies or the crumbling flesh of the Scalies. Powers of the mind, that's what the tall redhead possessed, the knack of being able to sense the presence of other intelligent life forms, and also if said life forms were friend or foe. She was able to smell trouble when it was coming toward them, able to know good from evil, right from wrong, black from white. She also had power deep from within. Taught by Mother Sonia, back during her childhood in Harmony, to call upon and wield the near-mystic force of Gaia, the Earth Mother, Christy could channel the very energy of the planet itself, using her body as a vessel. Such an act infused her with incredible strength, along with heightened awareness, but only for a short time. While the world seemed to slow to a crawl to her enhanced eyes, she would move at triple speed. Immersion within Gaia's forces took a terrific toll on her physical and mental well-being. Remaining in the trance too long, she would ultimately lose her soul, and her earthly shell would literally burn out. The price she paid for summoning this power was dreadful, and always left her exhausted and drained for hours, sometimes days, after the fury of the Earth Mother had raced through her. In the aftermath, she was as weak and helpless as a newborn. A striking beauty, Christy possessed flawlessly pale alabaster skin. When combined with the sparkling emerald of her eyes and the passionate fire of her long red hair, it added to her already considerable presence. Dean Cotter was behind Christy. The youth shared his father's dark complexion and black curly hair. In many ways, he was a perfect Ryan Cotter in miniature. Perhaps he wouldn't be as tall as Ryan or possess his imposing presence, but he shared his sire's innate intelligence and sense of morality and fair play. Ryan Cotter had committed some ruthless acts in his younger days and done some things he knew would assure him of his own private chamber in whatever purgatory he eventually ended up serving after his death, But that was yesterday, this was now, and he was doing his damnedest to live free and in the present. A combination of Christie's and Dean's influence had seen to that. Another man brought up the back of the